You're listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum from humanmedia.org. Sid Caesar was one of American television's first real superstars, a sensational comedian who delighted 60 million viewers in the 1950s with his live weekly programs, Your Show of Shows and Caesar's Hour. And he assembled a stable of zany writers and performers, including future stars Woody Allen, Mel Brooks, Imogene Coca, Carl Reiner, and Larry Gelbart. A master of slapstick, funny faces, double talk, and pseudo-languages, Sid Caesar was inventing modern comedy.
All right, Harry, for $250,000, what is your answer?
First answer is, the aria comes from Rigoletto. It was written by Verdi, his unpublished voice, La Gioina della More, Nina Tenina, the printer, the Santa Maria, the Questa La Foto, the Little Giorgio,
those hilarious and heady days on primetime network television eventually faded, leaving the brilliant Sid Caesar trapped in a crisis of self-doubt, depression, and addiction to pills and alcohol. He fought his way back to sobriety and emotional health, as described in his moving memoir, Where Have I Been? Since then, Caesar has battled a series of physical ailments, a fractured hip, a prostate condition, and an inoperable hernia. I visited Sid Caesar in his 70s at his home in Beverly Hills, California. Even when the chips are down, he told me, he has always returned to the wellspring of humor for energy and hope.
It's important because it takes your mind off yourself, and that's, I would say, 80% of the problem. When you're lying in a bed, and they tell you, you can't do this, you've got to do that, you must do this, and you're pretty well depressed because it's not a very nice atmosphere. But if somebody comes in and tells you a joke, or somebody comes in and makes a little fun, or tells you about, hey, you hear what happened to so-and-so, you hear what happened to so-and-so, doesn't have to be a joke. It just can be something that somebody you know, and you talk about them. This guy comes in and brightens up your day, or she comes in and brightens up your day, makes you laugh. It puts you in a different frame of mind. When you're in a depressed attitude, everything in your body is depressed. You don't feel like doing anything. You don't want to do it. You lay here. The hell with it. Forget it. Who cares? Whatever. No, it'll be over soon. Who cares? You get to start thinking like that. Everything down, 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 which has a cumulative effect. And then, laughing is not going to cure you. Just, he's got a terrible disease. Well, give him a couple of jokes and he'll be fine. That's not it. It's the accumulative effect of laughing and being in a. When you laugh, you can't get mad at anybody when you're laughing. When you're laughing, you don't get mad at anybody, and you don't get mad at yourself. Look at me, I'm laying here, I'm doing this with something. I can't move this. I can't do. I can't raise. But God, I'm in pain. What am I going to do? I can't this and this. What's going to happen at home? And you got a trillion things going on in your mind. But when you laugh, there's only one thing you're doing. You're laughing. And laughing and crying are the same emotion. If you laugh too hard, you start to cry. Tears come to your eyes. And if you cry too hard, you get hysterical, you start to laugh. So it's one slips over into the other. So it's the same emotion. And you have to have that emotion. It's better to laugh than to cry. They're both releases. They're both tremendous releases. But I'd rather laugh than cry. Crying is a release, but you're still down after it. After you cry, you have a good cry. A woman has a good cry, and a guy can have a good cry too. It's not, it's not unmacho to cry. But it puts you in a frame of mind where you can say, "Yes, yes, I can do this." Will you try that? Yeah, okay. You're in that sort of an attitude, so you are looking on the other side. Well, you want to get up and start to walk a little bit today? If you're down, depressing, look. Will you forget about it? We'll try it tomorrow. All right, we'll talk about it. But if you're laughing, you're going to, hey, would you like the tailor? You think so? Yeah, give it a try. All right. You take the first step. That's it. It's only to get you the first step and then to take the next step. It's one step at a time. Nobody gets well in a bang, in a flash. An accident happens in a flash, but then you get well. It's a long process and tedious, and sometimes very tedious. And it depends upon the atmosphere you have around you. If you have a jovial atmosphere, you know, you can't have me laughing all the time. You got to get serious and pay attention to what you have to do. But you're willing to accept it more when you're in a laughing mood.
To accept?
To accept not what's happened to you, what you have to do to get well. If you have to do some exercises, if you have to watch your diet, if you joke about it, you'll do it. You have much more of a chance of doing it than if you're just depressed and say, oh, forget it. Will you, look, don't bother me now. I just don't want to, look, would you just leave me alone? I just want to be by myself. When you're laughing, you don't want to be by yourself. You want to share it with somebody. You want to share the laughter. So laughing is something that brings you out of the mood that the illness has put you in.
Have there been times you were depressed when humor brought you out of it?
Yes, many times. Many, many times. I mean, I've gone through a series. I've had five operations, one after the other, every year, like clockwork. This one, my hip broke, and it was the prostate, and it was this, and it was that, you know, and it was a little more. But then I looked at myself, and I said, well, here we go again, Sid, you know, and I pulled myself out of it. Because I laugh at myself. I found a way to laugh at myself. If you can laugh at yourself, that's almost 50% of the battle. You mustn't take life too seriously. That's the truth. You know, time, as I said before, timing is everything. When something happens, you may be on your vacation, and you look at this, I'm just going on my vacation, and this happened. I tripped, I fell, I hit my head, I did my this, I went out, I broke this. But then again, you got to look at the other side. Listen, I'm on my vacation. I'll be all right. You know, I'll be able to get back to work. I'll be do this. I'll be do that. And I won't lose that much time. You know, so you can always there's always a silver lining. There's always if you look for it. But you got to look for it.
The psychology of the clown, the comedian, like Sid Caesar, is fascinatingly complex, often a roller coaster of emotional highs and lows, viewed through a special lens that sees a layer of absurdity just beneath the surface of our experiences. Through their unusual perceptions, always informed by personal struggles, comedians sometimes develop deep insight into the human condition.
A lot of people walk into a doctor and they say, make me better now. And they lay down and say, do it to me. Give me the magic shot. Give me the magic pill, the silver bullet, whatever it is. There is no such a thing. There is none. You've got to do it. The doctor can help you and guide you, but that's up to you if you want to. The doctor says stop smoking. Only you can stop smoking. Doctor says, I stop smoking. Well, that's good. I'm trying like a son of a gun. Yes, I'm trying. You're trying and trying until you really want to do it. I'm an alcoholic. If I take a drink, it's up to me to stop drinking, not the doctor, who tells me, which thing is something that I know. If I drink, it's no good for me. It's, you know, it's poison. So what I do is I talk to myself and say, whenever you feel like that, nah, I think I'll just walk around, take a walk, take a swim, take a this, go call somebody, get up, go do something. Because it's mostly self-indulgence. You know, drinking and all the addictions are self-indulgence, you know. I mean, a lot of people, they just let themselves, just for now. And for now comes every day. It's not what you do once in a while. It's like food. It's not what you eat once in a while. You know, once in a while you go out and I have a corned beef sandwich once in a while, once a month, once every 2 months. I'll have a corned beef sandwich. I like a corned beef sandwich. I'd like to, I love a piece of apple pie. What's bad? Nothing wrong, you know. But if you do it every day, you're going to get, it ain't going to help you. It's not going to help you, let's face that. So what I do, I keep on a very strict diet. No fat, no salt, no sugar. And that's every day. And once in a while, I'll go off like a reward. Okay, Sid. And you look forward to it. It's like a whoopee. Today is going to be corned beef day. And boy, we're going to have a piece of apple pie. Mmm. You can taste it now. So you build up to it. It means it. But if you have it every day, it's no big special thing.
We're talking with Sid Caesar, pioneer of television comedy and author of Where Have I Been and Caesar's Hours. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. To learn more, visit our website, humanmedia.org.
What in your approach to life enables you to see the ridiculous side of things where other people may be less lighthearted?
I don't know. It's the way you approach life. It's the way you approach your whole being. When I was a kid, when I used to go see the, you know, these horror pictures, those guys were horror pictures. Today, the meat markets, they chop up the blood right in front of you, you know. But that was scary in those days. But I always saw the camera there for some reason. I don't know why. I said, I'm looking at it. I said, there had to be a camera to take the picture. And somebody is saying, cut, roll them, or whatever it is. So I never remember. The only time I was really scared was I saw Frankenstein with Boris Karloff. I was a kid. I went, wow, boy. When I saw him, that was the only time I was really scared. But aside from that, I always saw the funny side of something, you know.
Are you saying when you realized the presence of a camera that enabled to give you some sort of objective
perspective?
Yeah, it's
like a different point of view. You know, it's what they want you to see, but I saw the camera. For some reason, I saw the camera there. I said, somebody had to take these pictures. I mean, it just didn't happen. You can get lost in a picture, but I find it hard to get lost in a picture, you know. It's because I see it, I get too analytical. I see it, how it's being made, or this or that, you know. But I enjoy some pictures, but a lot of them, if I let myself go, I'll just go around and watch the direction, watch the acting, and I don't get involved in the story, you know.
So you're saying, likewise, you can distance yourself from the drama of life that way?
Not distance myself, because I'm in life. You have to understand that. It's not a fairy tale. This is actually happening. You know, these things, people say, well, it's a, you know, once in a while. No. Life happens, and life is something that you got to... It's going to go on with you or without you or around you or in you. You know, you can be part of it, or you can step back and look at it, or you can get involved with it. But I find that I can look at it, and I can distance myself from it when I want to, and yet I can be into it very, very, because I watch my diet very, very closely. And I do my exercises. I work out every day, 6 days a week. I walk every day, and I enjoy myself, because even if I do nothing else for the rest of the day, at least I did something for myself. You know, I get up, I take a walk, I stretched, I exercised, I worked out, I took a swim. And I feel that, you know, if I do nothing else for the rest of the day, I did something. I mean, I got my body going. I feel good. It gives you tone or something. Your circulation in the body, of the blood in the body, is a very, very important thing. If you don't get it to circulate and go around and get it, you know, it's a machine. It's a very, very delicate and intricate machine. I mean, we don't even know 1 trillionth of what the body can do. I mean, if you take... All the music that's been written in the entire world, if you want to take a look at it, all the music that has been written in the entire world for all these years, there are only 7 notes. Just 7 notes. Now look at all the combinations and different rhythms and different, just with 7 notes. The thousands and thousands of, millions of songs that have been written, the thousands of symphonies and concertos and just with 7 notes. Now, there are so many chemicals in your brain, and the brain is the best mixer. If you go into shock, all of a sudden you don't feel the pain. That's endorphins going down. The body takes care of itself. It's a tremendous machine. It's something that we have, with all our knowledge, we know very little about, with all the knowledge that we know. Because there are certain diseases which we will never conquer. You know, because it's too intricate, even when we go down to the gene level. But the body is a self-protecting, it'll protect itself, unless it's overwhelmed. But if you keep the body up to date, and you keep the body well-tuned, and don't, you know, it's like a car, you put good gas in, you change the oil once in a while, you know, you take good care of it, the car will take care of you.
One of the feelings I get about the body is because it has this built-in resiliency, built-in mechanism for self-repair, that the key thing is just not to block that mechanism from functioning smoothly.
And also you can enhance it, you know. If you eat the right food, if you give it a little exercise, work it out once in a while. You know, if you drive your car around the city, stop, go, stop, go, stop, go, stop, go, the car's going to break down, you know, because it's not built for that. And it's built, the body is, that's why you have legs, it's built to walk. You know, we didn't have cars. You walked someplace, and you walked back, and you got up the hill, and you got down the hill. So you used your body. The muscles are there for something, not just to hold the skeleton together. It's there for something to be used.
You've been listening to the Humankind Well-Being Forum. I'm David Freudberg. For more information and to learn about Walking Through the Storm, our radio documentary project for cancer survivors, please go to humanmedia.org. Thank you for listening.